Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The other rights remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door,
this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that of a sexual nature and should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or from some television show. The facts I'm retelling you were presented to me by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My descriptions of the crime scenes, what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. And I want to thank all the patron members and convicts and Apple subscribers. Love y'all. Thank you so much for your continued support. And I want to tell all lifers that I love and appreciate them. And let's get into this episode. Y'all, this guy I'd never even heard of before. And again, this is another one sent to me by Leah Marie. This guy, holy smokes. We're going to call it Sam Little, this episode, right? And so this man, if you will, was born Samuel Little, or AKA, they called him Sam, right? And he was born on June the 7th of 1940. And he is, it's got to be the biggest killer that I've ever heard about. And I don't know how I haven't heard of him before. But anyway, he was born Samuel Little in Reynolds, Georgia, y'all. Now, 1940, that's older than my daddy, right? Typically, you know, as happens in these cases later on when they try to find mitigating circumstances to save people's lives, they, you know, they dig into their childhoods and you know, try to find out why this person is the way that they are, right? Well, Little's upraising was supposedly filled with violence and abuse. And according to him, he claimed that his mother, Bessie May, was a teenage prostitute who had left him, abandoned him when he was just a baby. All right. Now, authorities believe his mom might have given birth to him while she was in jail, because the census from that year when Little was born said Bessie May worked as a maid and his father was a 19-year-old guy named Paul McDowell. All right. Soon after his birth, the family moved to Lorain, Ohio. And that's going to be common throughout the story. This dude covered the whole United States. In Lorain, Ohio, small town where he was raised by his grandmother. But according to Little, his grandmother was also abusive during his upbringing. And he went to Hawthorne Junior High School, where he was always getting into trouble, discipline behavior, and he basically, was a bad student all the way around, grades and everything else, and always in trouble. And according to him, this is kind of trippy, but according to him, he began having sexual fantasies about strangling women even as a child. And he said it started when he was in kindergarten and he saw his teacher touch her neck, right? And I mean, that's kind of crazy in and of itself. He says, as a teenager, he collected true crime magazines that depicted the choking of women. So, right, starting out of the gate. And he began using drugs when he was just a kid. He drifted from town to town, committing a shitload of crimes to support his drug habit, which is common, right? In 1956, he was convicted of breaking and entering into a property in Omaha, Nebraska. And they got him. The juvenile detention center, juvenile offender program, they got him. And he was held in the detention center. Which, y'all, they don't call juvenile detention centers prisons for whatever the fucking reasons. I guess they think it's more politically correct to not say a kid's in prison, but that's what they are. Y'all, he was locked up there for 2.5 years in prison for this one breaking and entering into a house. Now, that if he got arrested, this is his first time to be locked up for any significant amount of time. Even by his own admission, he had committed hundreds of crimes before then, before he had this, he spent this 2.5 years in baby jail. But he'd been getting away with crimes for a long time before this. And then on that booking sheet for the juvenile detention center, when it has, it has a place to list your parents, and of course the dad wasn't listed, and his mother was listed as whereabouts unknown, all right? So, but his criminal history just goes for decades, y'all. And, he was a frequent flyer to the cops, even though he kept moving around. But he was arrested more than 100 times for charges including kidnapping, rape, robbery, and assault. Now, 100 times he's arrested. For all those 100 times he was arrested, he stayed in jail for less than 10 years behind bars. All right? Imagine that. Now, I get it back then. It's not like it is now with computer systems and everything else. And he's transient. He's moving from place to place. Maybe all his charges don't catch up with him, or they keep letting him go because they don't want to house a juvenile. Rape, kidnapping, robbery, and assault, and you only 100 times, and you only do 10 years behind bars. That's crazy. So he gets out and he moved to Florida to live with his mom. I guess he found her, right? And this is in the late 1960s, y'all. And he tries to go on the straight and narrow, if you will, and get a job, right? And he worked as a cemetery worker. That's kind of suspicious there, right? Had been buying the magazines, only the ones that have women being choked to death, but leave it at that. He also got a job as an ambulance attendant, right? And going to help people, supposedly. But he's trying to, I mean, I guess he's trying to make an honest living, but I doubt if he ever quit doing his crimes, because you know, and I've told you hundreds of times, they don't stop, right? And they progress as they go along, or as they become more educated in crimes without getting caught. So then he leaves Florida, and he begins to travel all over, and he had stayed a frequent flyer, and he kept getting arrested by the cops. And he was arrested in 8 different states, y'all, for crimes including driving under the influence, fraud, shoplifting, solicitation of a prostitute, y'all, and armed robbery, aggravated assault, and rape. Now, this is in 8 different states after he had been arrested 100 times before this, at least. If you get arrested 100 times, I guarantee he did 1,000 crimes that they don't know about. And this is way back when, y'all. They didn't have the NCIC computer and all this stuff, and the criminal histories ready to print out and all that. But he got arrested 8 more times, and all this is serious. I mean, shoplifting is not, and solicitation not so much, or DWI or DUI, but the armed robbery, ag assault, and rape. Yep, he's just rolling along. So now he's locked up in prison. And you would think he's going to stay for a while. Anyway, he's in prison. He did his time. He didn't let his time do him. And one of the things he did was join the prison boxing team. Now, I told y'all about this on Bloody Angola and stuff like that. You got to be a good boy in prison to be able to even get on the boxing team. And it's a big deal. It's a prestigious position. And other inmates don't fuck with you because they know you're a badass boxer, right? And he was good at it, evidently. And he was proud of it. So, and what they do is, not only do you have boxing matches against prisoners inside your own prison, you get to travel to other prisons to box against their prison boxing teams. And, some of the best in the world came out of prison as boxers, like Travis Etienne that fought Mike Tyson, right? But anyway, he was good at it. And they said he had a hell of a punch, that he could knock people out with one punch. And he starts to call himself a prize fighter. And when he gets out of prison in 1961, it became found out a little bit later on, he would knock out his victims with one punch before strangling them, meaning, when you do that, y'all, if you bloodied somebody's face like that and they're dead, they, back then especially, they may not have done the autopsies, and if there was no obvious signs that the person hadn't been strangled to be killed. But so he gets out, and then guess what? He gets arrested again in 1961. He got sentenced to 3 years in prison for breaking into a furniture store in Lorain, Ohio. Right? Well, frequent flyer again. It's a different time, different date. I'm sure if they knew he had 108 arrests before all over the United States, maybe they would have kept him a little bit longer. But he got released in 3 years. And so in 1964, they turn him back out on the street. And what does he do? Well, he continues his shit, right? And then Little's first confirmed homicide was in 1970, when he strangled a prostitute in Atlanta, Georgia. He's choked her to death, right? Now, it's 1970, he's born in 40, so he's 30 years old, and it's a first confirmed murder. Now, I submit to you that he's done a whole bunch that they don't know about, and he was smart enough to keep traveling jurisdictions And back then, not having the computer systems and, you know, no way to put people in as wanted or DNA or anything like that. You do it enough, you're going to get caught sooner or later. But he went on and he continued to kill throughout the 1970s and the 1980s. But his victims, the ones that he wanted, were always vulnerable women, y'all, including prostitutes and drug addicts and homeless people, right? The people always tell you that, you know, they're living a high-risk lifestyle. Prostitutes, for the obvious reason, they're out in the street. They're the ones who will get in a car with anybody. I mean, it doesn't make it right, but that's what makes them high risk. Drug addicts, he could buddy up to them and be like, hey, let's do some dope together. And again, they're more susceptible to being with a shithead because of their addictions. And then homeless people, nobody cared about them. And 9 times out of 10, nobody cares about the homeless people. So they're an easy victim and they're not going to have anybody that's calling the police department saying, what happened to my sister? Why aren't you working the case? Well, you know why? Drug addicts and prostitutes too. Most of the time, and in the cases I work, people just don't care about them. You know, but whether they burn the bridges with their family members and friends and when the cops, squeaky wheel gets the grease, let's put it like that. You know, and the cops would have other cases to work. So this is what Sam Little would do. And the way he liked to kill them is by some form of strangulation, y'all. Remember his kindergarten teacher touching her neck? But sometimes he would do it other ways. Like if they fought back, he would beat them to death before he had a chance to strangle them. Or if they fought hard and, you know, he had a knife on them, he would stab them to death. And in some cases, he even drowned people. Now, I don't know how that works unless he picked up one of these high-risk victims near the edge of the water and they fought or whatever. But by the mid-70s or 1975, he had been arrested 26 times in 11 states for more crimes, including theft, assault, attempted rape, fraud, and here's one gonna get you, attacks on government officials. I'm assuming, y'all, that means that he would fight the police when he got arrested, and that's instead of calling it a resisting charge like they do now. That's what they had it as back then. But I mean, hundreds of times this dude's been arrested, and he's only spent like 5 years in prison. And it's hard to catch a smart criminal. And again, it's what the time frame was back then, and law enforcement was different. But, you know, he's born in 1940, and the next one I'm going to tell you about is in 1982. So law enforcement has advanced tremendously, but they still don't have computers. They don't have DNA. They don't have the national database that you can easily punch this guy's name in and see all that he's done. So that's how he keeps getting away with it. But in 1982, he's in Pascagoula, Mississippi. Now, for y'all that don't know, Pascagoula is just past Biloxi, Mississippi, close to Alabama. And it's in the very, very southern part of the state, close to the coast, all right? And there, he would meet a lady named Melinda Rose LaPree. And after he met her, she was 22 years old, y'all. After he met her, she disappeared. Okay. And ultimately, the cops put together the case and they say, you know, figure out Sam Little did this. And they arrested him for her murder. Now, great, right? Finally, gonna get this asshole off the street. Can't hurt anybody else. All's gonna be good. So they take him to the grand jury. And you know, the grand jury is a secret meeting of 12 people where the prosecutor goes in and gets to put on their case. Now, there's no defense attorney. Sam Little wouldn't have been in the room. Basically, it's a secret meeting. And the basically, if you can't get a fucking indictment in a grand jury, then something is wrong, right? I mean, the prosecutor can put on whatever evidence they want to about past crimes, anything. They can tell the whole story. It's not bound by the same rules that a trial is, okay? But you know what happened? These people in Pascagoula, Mississippi, I don't know if they had a shitty prosecutor or what the deal was. They didn't indict him, y'all. They returned a no true bill, and guess what happened? They had to let him go. And the DA's like, to the cops, well, go get me more information. All right, you got to figure this out. The grand jury didn't like this, or they didn't like that, or whatever it was. But once again, Sam Little is free. And even while the cops are still investigating him for Melinda LaPree's death, or her homicide, not her death, her murder, Sam Little, jets. But they called him again, and they catch him this time because the state of Florida had some homicide detectives, and they had found a body of Patricia Ann Mount, who was 26 years old, and they found this body in 1982 again, y'all, and so they get a warrant for Sam Little, and they extradite him to Florida, and they put him on trial for the murder of Patricia Ann Mount, right? Good stuff. And this, now, remember, we're finally going to get a chance to get this asshole off the street, all right? So, trial comes up, and as is always done, prosecution puts on their stuff first, and then the defense gets put on their stuff, and the prosecution gets to answer before they do closing arguments and it goes to the jury. But the prosecution witnesses picked Little out in court, and they said, hey, this is the dude, Sam Little, who spent the time with Miss Mount on the night before her disappearance. Basically, he's the last one seen to be alive with her. And this trial goes on, y'all, and they put on a bunch of other evidence, and evidently, the jury didn't believe the prosecution witnesses. Now, let's talk about that for a second. On a lot of these cases, and especially the ones I work, it's very, very hard to get a conviction when, if you're dealing with a bunch of dopers that are your eyewitnesses, then the defense is going to tear them apart on the witness stand, right? Try to make them bad before these 12 jury members who are sitting in the box.
Do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day? Maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, right? Boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email, or she can record her voice if she prefers to do that, or she can do both. Cool. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book, as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different. And in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with My Life in a Book is simple, and in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And who have regular jobs and go to church on Sunday and all that, and they don't understand the lifestyle. But let me tell you this, just because someone is a doper or a murderer or whatever, just because whatever their past may be, it doesn't make them a liar, right? I mean, when a lot of these cases, when high-risk victims go missing, you're not going to get a high-risk victim out of church. You're not going to have a bunch of preachers and choir boys and church-going people that are going to be your eyewitnesses. It's going to be the people that the victim surrounded themselves with. And evidently in this case, the jury didn't believe these high-risk victims. Sam Little was found not guilty in January of 1984. And the hits go on, y'all. So what does he do then? He leaves the state of Florida and he goes as far across the country as you can go to beautiful San Diego, California. Literally, he couldn't go any further in the United States of America to get away. But that's what he did. He, constantly on the move, stick and move like a boxer, constantly on the move. Hey, I'll kill this one here, then I'm a haul ass over here, confuse their investigation. They don't have computers. They don't have, advanced law enforcement technology, stick and move. And look, fuck, it's been working for him. He's been getting away with this now for 44 years. All right. So anyway, he goes to beautiful San Diego. And in October of 1984, the San Diego police were having a shit show problem. And back then you had your local news and you had your newspapers. No cable TV, y'all, in 1984, or was just coming out. But there was definitely no CNN, no headline news, no Fox News, none of that bullshit. So you had to tune in to your CBS, ABC, or NBC affiliate to get your nightly news or read the newspaper, okay? No internet, no cell phones. And the San Diego police, they had a rapist going around raping women, and they're in oh shit mode because it happened more than once. So they start doing special details. They form a task force to find out who this rapist is, right? And one night they are patrolling the high risk victim areas, looking, trying to get a break. And they came upon this isolated lot in a not so good area, San Diego. And there was a Ford Thunderbird parked there. Well, usually, this wasn't far from where the prostitutes walked, and the cops, you know, you see a car parked in an empty lot like that close to there, usually somebody's turning the trick, right? It's a prostitute and they're John. But as they pull up to the Ford Thunderbird, they see a guy get out of the car and he's zipping up his pants, right? And so they say, hey, you know, what's going on here? What are you doing here? And he's like, I ain't saying anything, right? And they pull him to the side, trying to question him. Well, one of the officers goes up to the car and they shine a light in and they see in the back seat of this Ford Thunderbird, there was a black lady covered in blood and she had been beaten so bad that there was so much blood, they thought she was dead, y'all. And the guy who got out of the car was none other than Sam Little. And y'all, they caught him in the act finally, right? And they arrested him and they charged him with sexual assault or rape, y'all. That's California for rape. Kidnapping, because obviously the victim, you know, didn't just lay there and take that beating in the back of the car. So charged him with kidnapping. And guess what? She lived, y'all. So they charged him with attempted murder. But it's still great charges, right? And they would go on to, I mean, they can't tie him into the rest of the rapes and stuff because they didn't have the DNA and everything like we keep talking about. And that's a common theme in the story. They didn't have the technology that they have now, but they had enough. They literally caught him putting his dick in his pants, getting out of the car. And I guarantee you, he thought the woman was dead and the cops thought she was dead, but she lived. And they take him to trial and she testified against him, right? Slam dunk. And the DAs and the cops, you know, high-fiving, they thinking he's going to be locked up for years. But they were dead-ass wrong. All right? 1 month later, Sam Little was again found by the police in the back seat of another car with an unconscious woman who had been beaten, just absolutely beaten to shit. Remember, he's a prize fighter, and she's been beaten to shit, and she's also been strangled this time, y'all. And guess what? Here's the kicker. Now, while he's out on bail or whatever for the trial, they find him again. Guess where they found him, y'all? In the same fucking parking lot that he was in when the attempted murder and the rape and the kidnapping he was under trial for or going to go to trial for. He is in the same fucking parking lot where he attempted to murder Miss Berrios after he beat her and raped her and left her for dead. And the cops caught him putting his dick in his pants. So now they put both cases together. And they're thinking, he's going to be gone for a long time. Everything's going to be good, right? Well, for the beating and the strangulation and the kidnapping and rapes and attempted murder of these two women, he goes to prison, right? For both crimes. And then he pled out to them. He goes to prison. And guess what happens? He spent 2.5 years in prison for both crimes, y'all, for both of these vicious, brutal crimes. He only spent 2.5 years and he walks out in February of 1987. Figure it out. I'm going to keep saying they must not have known of all his other charges and that he beat juries before and, you know, the hundreds of crimes he's committed across the United States because they didn't have the information. But He gets out after 2.5 years, and he, true to his form, true to his nature, he moves, or he hauls ass basically to Los Angeles. This would be a problem for the women of Los Angeles, because while he was there, he killed at least 10 more women, right? It's just fucking unheard of. The story's not over, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more. So later on, Little was arrested on September 5th of 2012, and he was living in a homeless shelter in Louisville, Kentucky. All right? Common. I mean, you move around all this time, whether you're doing dope or not. The first thing you do when you get to a new town, find you a bed, right? Homeless shelters, they take them in at nighttime and put them out during the daytime. You go get work or whatever you're going to do and come back in. And, most of them have strict rules on no alcohol, no narcotics, et cetera. But he's living in this homeless shelter in Louisville, and he gets arrested. Now, this is interesting. He doesn't get arrested for murder, okay? He got arrested for a dope charge, and the dope charge was out of the state of California. Now, that means, y'all, they were looking at him for everything else, okay? A lot of times in my career, I would find somebody, run somebody through the NCIC computer, and it comes back, they got a warrant out of California or wherever, states away, for like some petty dope charge like this, and you have to contact, or the dispatch has to contact that agency and see if they want me to arrest on that warrant, which means if they say yes, they have to send a teletype back saying, yes, we want him. And that at that point in time, after I arrest him, they are responsible for paying for his housing, and they're responsible for extraditing him back to whatever state, right? Well, something's up, because California says, yes, we want him on that dope charge. We're looking for him. And they got him, and they extradited him back to California to face a dope charge, right? But while he's in on the dope charge, right, you hold him so they can't kill anybody else. You know what kind of badass this dude is. You know if you don't get him off the street, he's going to continue to kill. So, prosecutors have absolutely had part to do in this. They're holding him on a dope charge while they look at him for all these other cases. And this is when DNA comes into play, y'all. Finally. So after he's locked up and they're holding him on a dope charge, the cops use DNA testing, which was in its infancy, okay? They get a sample. They're like, hey, this is the new shit. Let's try it and see if we can tie him to any of our other cases. And they do. They get his DNA, and they test it, and they find his DNA is a match in that to several murders, including a lady by the name of Linda Alford, who was killed on July 13th of 1987. And again, the next lady was Guadalupe Duarte Apicata, who was killed on September 3rd of 1987. Y'all see the pattern? And Miss Audrey Nelson Everett, who was killed on August the 14th of 1989. Now, all three of these women were killed, and their bodies were dumped on the streets of Los Angeles, right? So that's why they extradited him back on a dope charge and hold him so they can use this new technology to tie his ass up. So and it's crazy, but the he was extradited to Los Angeles, like I told you about. And finally, and this is a long, long time, many years later, from 1987 to when they finally charged him on January the 7th of 2013. Okay? And guess what? Through using new DNA technology, they finally get convictions. And even though Sam Little had been convicted of these three murders, the FBI believes that he is responsible for many, many more. I don't dispute that. We already know he's been tried for some, found guilty for attempted murder of two more. This dude didn't stop, right? I mean, and finally, after all these years, they got him down, and obviously they feel that he's done many more murders. So what do? They continue to investigate. And a few months later, the cops said that Little was being investigated for involvement in 36 murders committed in the 1980s, which until this investigation, they didn't have any suspects in the murders. 36, y'all. That's 36 other people that he moved around and he murdered. He's a murdering fucker, and it's what he does. And finally, when DNA comes out and they start the CODA system, which everybody, all the victims, your unsolved cases, and y'all know this, they put, if they had the funding, the departments would put the DNA of these victims into the CODA system. And as you get people like this asshole who are arrested for, murders and rapes, you get the swabs from them and you put them in the system. And again, DNA was still kind of in its infancy stages, but they were able to tie them into 36 more homicides. All right. I'm going to stop it there for this week because this thing goes on and on and on. I mean, it makes me want to go back and look at any cold cases from this time and run his DNA against it or see if there's DNA still left in it. But I'm going to continue this one next week. It's going to blow your mind, y'all. And then we're going to get into all the victims and all the different homicides. And it is, I'm just sitting here scrolling, and it's just unbelievable. So they have each homicide, when it was committed, where it was committed, and like notes from the cops, and it's going to blow your mind. So Sam Little, the story's not over yet, but I want to thank each one of y'all for tuning in and liking and listening, sharing and all that good stuff. O'Hara's Pub, 3rd Street, downtown Baton Rouge, all right, 132 to 136 3rd Street, is going to be opening on April the 19th. That's also the weekend of the Downtown Blues Fest. And the reason I'm telling you this is Brian Ott is the owner. And if y'all have been to a crew bash in the past, then you would know that Brian Ott is the owner of the Basin Music and Concert Hall where I do my shows at. For the crew bashes, I've done, I think, 4 out of 5 of them there. And Brian Ott is amazing. He's a great friend of mine. He's super, super pro law enforcement. He's involved with the NYPD, New York Police Department, and actually the head of Blue Lives Matters for the whole United States of America is coming in that same week for the opening because, they're good friends and he wants to be there to support Brian also. And I'm going to have him on Real Life, Real Crime. And we're going to talk some old cop stories, but you'll get to hear that New York accent. But the reason I'm telling you O'Hara's Pub, I'm going to be there. I'll be there that Friday night and that Saturday night for sure. And so I'm going to give you a lot more information on it before, as this goes along, but when you hear this, It'll only be like another week away. But I'll give you more information. Y'all come down and see me. We're going to rock it. It's going to be a great time in O'Hara's Pub. The beer will be cold. And it's a great place. Super nice. Hope y'all all come down there and see me. So thank you, everyone, for liking and listening and sharing. And y'all go download the Real Life Real Crime Community app, which is where I go first every day before I go to all the other pages. And if you have, especially if you have a cold case and you have a significant amount of information, not just something you heard about, please email me at woody@reallifeRealCrime.com. All the information you have, I will read it. I can't promise you I'm going to work it, but I got something going on where I want these cases. And the more information you have, the more chance you have that I'm actually going to do something with it. Give face to the victims and face to the crime. So do that. Email me at woody@reallifeRealCrime.com. I'm sure I'm forgetting a bunch of shit, but thank y'all for go leave us a review and like and listen and share and all that great podcaster shit. Now, LOPA, Louisiana Organ Procurement Agency. You know, it's my jam and it's my people. They're heroes. Everybody that signs up to be an organ donor, yeah, the chance of your organs ever being used to save someone else's lives are so freaking slim. It's like winning the Powerball, right? But there are people that are dying every day waiting on these organs, y'all. And I get messages every day from different lifers who their loved ones have been able to successfully help Louisiana Organ Procurement Agency save lives, and they've become heroes. And you know, LOPA is their nonprofit, y'all, and they take care of these victims and the victims' families, and the recipients' families. You know, they keep it. It's just such a beautiful organization. They do so much that to save lives and help people who are going through the worst time. And so if you're not an organ donor, please go sign up, and you don't have to be from the state of Louisiana. You can be you could be living in Shiner, Texas, right? If you want to become an organ donor, go to LOPA.org, fill out the questionnaire. It takes 2 minutes, and press the button and become a hero. All right. And I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. Until next time or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace.
Yeah, the rights remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door, your running's over, that's for sure. He already knows all about you. Cut you down on Murder Bayou. Now you better walk the line. Real life, real crime.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.